On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour, a minute past six here on the East Coast. This is the Head On Radio Network. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Friday on the front porch. Hopefully we'll be a little more funnish and lighthearted than we have in the last couple of days. But, you know, there's always some piece of right-wing tripe that will that stands the chance of interfering with our fun. Try as we might. The horn is available in a wide variety of manifestations. You can, of course, most easily access the stream at headonradionetwork.com via the Listen Live button. That's where that's where you'll find both the rerun stream and the live stream when the program is live, like it is right now. You can also find the horn stream at whiterosesociety.org, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, and TuneIn Radio, among a whole bunch of others that, I don't know, maybe this weekend I'll try to find some more. There's a whole lot of ways to find us, no doubt about it, though. Now, like I said, this is Friday, the third day of August. And, well, let's see, probably be a good idea to do some program notes beforehand. Show schedule. Next week begins PRISM West Virginia's Summer Academy and Dr. Bill O'Brien's Teaching American History series that will last until the following Monday. Now, there will be a break in the proceedings on Wednesday, so we will have a prayer meeting Wednesday right back here at home. It's even vaguely possible there could be a Tuesday evening show. But definitely a Wednesday, but maybe a Tuesday. I'd put the Tuesday in invisible ink on the calendar if I were you. Beyond that though, Monday and Tuesday and Friday, Thursday and Friday and the following Monday are all PRISM West Virginia American History broadcasts. That will take place literally all week and all day. Okay, not literally all week. We already talked about Wednesday. But from early in the morning here, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock, until sometimes into the evening, we will have live American history broadcasts. I hope you're looking forward to it as much as I am, because they are very, very special indeed. And eventually, you know, if you've never listened to Dr. Bill before, well, A, why not? B, you're in for a treat, because you're going to learn American history and especially the history of the founding and of the 19th century moving in toward the 20th century, because this whole thing is geared toward actually teaching American history teachers how to teach American history. Not to say that they don't know, but rather to teach it using actual history as opposed to what someone else said about someone's opinion of what might or might not have been history. It's primary source material. It's the kind of history that the right wing never wants America to hear, because they tend to make their American history up on the fly. So that's all day, every day. And I'm going to try to get I will make a concerted effort to get the files to Ben Birch and have him put them up under the podcast for the days that we're not doing a an actual show broadcast. Okay? And that is from a week from Monday to a week from Monday. In other words, from Monday the 6th to Monday the 13th of August. Okay?
Yeah.
So that bit of information is out of the way. It's awfully good to get a week of two straight weeks of broadcasting. Well, almost. We missed Thursday of last week. Two straight weeks of broadcasting under our belts. Nice to be home. Nice to not have the spinning wheels and the whine of the road underneath me. And nice to be able to sit back and email back and forth and just have a generally fine old time. It is humid as heck here. Even here in the fabulous Horn Studio, complete with the Head On Radio Network color weather window, it's muggy. But we'll get through it. We'll get through it. Kick back, relax, wander on up onto the front porch, grab yourself a cold long neck out of that zinc galvanized wash tub with the ice and a little bit of rock salt scattered over it all the way up to the necks of the long neck. Maybe iced tea. Maybe lemonade's your speed. Maybe you pull out of that earthenware jug with the corn cob stopper over there. Might be to your liking. But whatever you prefer, kick back and relax and enjoy. This is our time to converse, our time to talk, our time to cuss and discuss, as the saying goes. Now, where to begin? You know, I couldn't. Let's work the lighthearted side of the street, because this is too funny. The incredibly silly Chick-fil-A foo-for-all continues. I don't mean that there's anything silly about the homophobia of the Chick-fil-A Corporation. I mean the almost incessant for-profit media obsession with it. It's still going strong over at Radio Rwanda. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And we haven't heard from him in a while, so who better to explain what the Chick-fil-A problem is than Herb Kane? Yeah, really, Herb.
I talked with Dan Cather 2 days ago. First of all, he did not say he was against gay marriage. He said he was for traditional marriage. And look, this is what's so ridiculous about this whole accusation toward Dan Cather and Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, isn't it ridiculous when people who have been treated like second-class citizens for literally thousands of years finally begin to speak up and demand the rights that are guaranteed to them under the Constitution of the United States of America? Isn't that just ridiculous?
This concept has been closed on Sunday since its inception. Right. Duh.
Yeah, duh, Herb. Because nobody's protesting them being closed on Sunday. The protest is about the use of corporate cash to fund bigotry and outright hate. Or have I got that completely wrong? One never knows. I'll stand to be corrected, or just sit here, if I do. He's right. Chick-fil-A's been closed on Sunday for as long as I can remember. I think we got our first Chick-fil-A when the brand new mall opened up way back long about what? Oh, 1977? 78? Yeah. It was a highfalutin thing. It's a little the worse for wear now. But it had a Chick-fil-A in it. And it was closed on Sunday. Of course, the rest of the mall was too. We are talking, of course, about Alabamistan. But no, never mind what I have to say. It's been a long time time since we've heard from Herb. Let's go back to Herb.
Maybe they do believe in traditional marriage. This is no surprise. This is simply an attempt on the part...
Wait. Did you catch that?
This is no surprise. This is simply an...
Oh, I missed it. A little further.
...has been closed on Sunday since its inception. Right. Duh. Maybe they do believe in traditional marriage.
Okay. And herein lies the rub. Who are they? Maybe they do believe in traditional marriage. They. Impersonal pronoun. Are we to believe that in order to get one's Chick-fil-A payday every week, 2 weeks, once a month, however it is that Chick-fil-A pays, are we to understand that every, because he said they, that's third person plural, are we to understand that everybody who works there has to sign some sort of traditional marriage loyalty oath to get a little check with Mr. Cathy's autograph on it? Or whoever the local franchisee is? Because I'm pretty sure, just demographics and statistics being what they are, I'm pretty sure that not every single solitary human being that works at Chick-fil-A is 100% dyed-in-the-wool heterosexual. There's bound to be some gay folks working at Chick-fil-A, which must be like working in a closet. Can you imagine what it must... Because gone is the America where fast food restaurants were staffed by pimply-faced teenagers who were, you know, working their last couple of years of high school in order to save for college. No. You've got real, live, honest-to-Jesus, family-raising adults trying to do it on a Chick-fil-A payday. And we're to understand that every last one of them believes in traditional marriage? Never mind, of course, the what kind of tradition the traditional marriage is. What he means by that is Judeo-Christian marriage as defined by the right-wing fundamentalist religion industry. Because anybody who isn't a member of the right-wing fundamentalist religion industry can explain to you that it takes very little time to pop over into their right-wing holy book and find all kinds of marriage traditions. And any number of wives and camels and sheep and goats and oxen and asses. Down to the point that at one point in time, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky had to tell the children of Israel not to covet their neighbor's ass. Right? Traditional marriage, please. There's all kinds of marriage traditions all over the world. But here's the fun part. Not hardly a single one of them... Well, no. Here's the fun part. None of the marriage traditions that are espoused, especially inside the Old Testament, are very much reminiscent of the traditional, alleged traditional marriage that folks like Herb Cain advocate, and Dan Cathy, and Ralph Reed, and Dr. James Dobson, and Pat Robertson, and the like. Remember, Pat Robertson says, gay folks are just trying to make all the heterosexual people feel uncomfortable for not being, you know, all gay. So we do have a problem with Herb here, in that, but then again, you know, he's a right-wing Republican, so they probably means the corporation, its board of directors, and its officers. I doubt if he even thinks about the shareholders. Maybe that's the they that Herb is talking about. Really, no way of knowing.
This is no surprise. This is simply an attempt on the part of the gay community to try and leverage their beliefs on another institution, a private company, since they can't seem to get enough attention. That's what this is all about.
Huh? You flesh eaters?
The gay community leveraging their beliefs. Is that where we are in 2012? Is an assertion of rights under the Constitution of the United States merely now a matter of faith? Is that what we mean by being a faith-based nation, where you can't know anything, where you can't assert anything as a matter of legal opinion? Or legal argument? Oh, no. That whole wanting to be treated like the rest of everybody else in the country who can get married and have all them 14th Amendment due process and equal protection protections, that's just a belief. They only believe they're fully American. The gay folks only believe they're entitled to constitutional protections. It's just a matter of belief. But wait a minute, Herb. If it's just a matter of belief, then aren't their beliefs as valid as yours? Let's check back with Herb. Maybe we'll get an answer.
Dan Cathy has every right. Now, let me tell you one other thing that I found out when I talked to Dan the other day.
Oh, how about that? We're not going to talk about gay folks having rights. They've only got beliefs. But by Jove, we'll just jump right out there and start examining Dan Cathy's rights. Is he the sole owner? I mean, can you go out and buy a share of Chick-fil-A? I honestly don't know. Are they traded on the homophobia exchange? Should there be one just for them and the other right? I don't know.
You know, with the public saying we are not going to be politically bullied and we are not going to...
Okay, I'm trying to have fun, but that really pisses me off. We're not going to be politically bullied. Bull. He's got the first syllable right. And he is feeding some political bull to the geniuses that watch Radio Rwanda. Isn't he? No, this makes me angry. The right wing are very, very good at this. And how sad it is that they are. Bullying is something that happens virtually every day somewhere in America. Children who are either gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer questioning, transgendered, or even remotely perceived to be any of those things. Not even things, any of those ways, are frequently harassed, tormented, tortured, attacked, struck, kicked, thumped, stomped, ostracized, alienated. Hoo-wee, I'm using a whole bunch of words here. It'd probably be right over Herb Cain's head. Matthew Shepard was bullied to the point that he was crucified on a barbed wire fence outside Laramie, Wyoming. The stories of bullied teenagers, either out of the mainstream or perceived to be out of the mainstream, are in this country legion. But once again, the right-wing religion industry would have you believe that they are the ones being persecuted.
With the public saying, we are not going to...
And by the way, Is Herb now a spokesperson for the public? Last I checked, the public included all 300 and some odd, and I do mean odd, million of us. But Herb knows what the public's saying. What's the public saying, Herb?
You're right. Now, let me tell you one other thing that I found out when I talked to Dan the other day. You know, with the public saying, we are not going to be politically bullied, and we're not going to support someone who does not believe that Dan Cathy should exercise free speech.
Huh? Wait a minute. I keep trying to let Herb finish, but Herb keeps making it hard to do. Who, at any point in time, has tried to stop Dan Cathy from engaging in free speech? You see, in that little simple assertion that is gobbled up by Emery and Eileen, and
Emery? Herb Cain says they're trying to stop Dan Cathy's freedom of speechifying.
Well, if Herb Cain's saying it, Eileen, they probably are godless sodomite liberals.
Trying to stop Dan Cathy's right of free speech. Okay, now, let me do some recollecting. That free speech thing. That comes from, where? What? Oh, yeah. The First Amendment, right? Yeah, I think it does. Let's, just for the fun of it, seeing as how Dan Cathy's having his right to free speech all took away from him, and the public's not going to stand for it. Let's see if maybe we can find us a copy. Of the First Amendment. Let's see, Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. I'll be damned. There's nothing in there that says what it does say, not that what the Constitution actually says ever matters much to a right-wing nut job. What it says is that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. Congress. You know, the government. Right? Am I to understand from the ignorance being promulgated by Herb Cain that he now thinks that gay folks who object to Dan Cathy's bigotry have taken over the government? Well, yeah, I guess he probably does when you come right down to it. But no, what he does is he equates anything one of his right-wing pals wants to say with the absolute right to say it and not deal with any ramifications therefrom. Nobody's abridging Dan Cathy's freedom of speech. Congress certainly isn't. But the thing is, when you engage your freedom of speech, others are prone to speak back. And being back to, even though Dan Cathy is a white man from Georgia, being back talked to does not constitute a congressional abridgment of free speech.
Support someone who does not believe that Dan Cathy should exercise free speech, they voted with their feet and their dollars. Dan's sales were in excess of $30 million that day, which is almost twice what he would, his previous high. Why? Because the American public...
What? He's beat his record? Oh, my goodness, he's beat his record high.
Simply saying, Eric, we are not stupid, and I think there's going to be a carryover effect in November.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, okay. So, the Chick-fil-A foo-frog flap... The Chick-fil-A flap is now the bellwether of the November presidential election. Ow. It's Friday on the front porch. I said we'd be a little lighthearted about things. I didn't say it'd be easy.
The first time I heard that number, $30 million, double normal. Can we?
Yeah, that's the first time that you've heard that, Mr. Fox Radio Rwanda guy, is because that's the first time Herb Cain has yanked it out his butt.
Show you yes. A soundbite of a gentleman who pulled up to a Chick-fil-A on Chick-fil-A
appreciation. No, for heaven's sakes, we're going to do that one. No, we're not. So one wonders if out of these excess millions that have come Chick-fil-A's way, will they use that to fund some more anti-gay American hate groups? Because that's what they've used those chicken sandwich dollars for in the past. Every waffle fry, every last chicken sandwich, every last nugget, every last glass of lemonade has had a little bit of homophobic hate in it because the profits from that have gone to support anti-gay hate groups. Charming when you think about it that way, isn't it? No, not really. But it is really how it is. Now, I have no, maybe y'all do, I have no information whatsoever about the Chick-fil-A kiss-off day today, or whatever it was being called. I hope it happened in broad form all across the country. I doubt if there was much same-sex kissing going on in, like, Beckley or any place like that around hereabouts, because... Well, violence could ensue. In the name of Jesus, mind you. Just like those F-bomb throwing strip miners, the audio of which I played for you last night, just like they will probably be in church this Sunday getting their bigotry affirmed. You know what I mean? Yeah. You have any doubt? Because I don't. I got one nasty little confession to make, though. This whole thing has given me a hankering for decent fried chicken, and it is hard to find. Went off looking for some Kentucky Fried Hot Wings last night, because that was... I like Popeyes myself. It's as close as I can get. But it did, and damned if we didn't get over there only to find out, yeah, never mind closed on Sunday, these suckers close at 8 o'clock, so no wings for Bob. Probably just as well, I don't really need them, I was just hankering for them. But it did put me in the mind of this, if you haven't seen it, it's worth hearing. John Goodman, without a doubt, has crossed that indefinable line into national comic treasure. My God, he was brilliant in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He practically carried Roseanne on his back. I don't mean physically, I mean the show. He is a superb actor. Even in little bitty itsy bitsy things like this that made me laugh till the tears were rolling down my face. Just about completely did Agnes in.
Why, hello there. It's me, the Colonel. It don't take a bona fide Einstein genius to know that I'm an oldie-fashioned sort. But when it comes to the subjugation of marriage rights, why, I reckon I'm a bit more progressive than my pals down at Chick-fil-A. Yep, let it be known that Colonel Sanders loves the gays. Hell, I might even be gay.
Hey, Colonel, dinner's almost ready.
Be right there, O'Marion. See? Sorry. I was just tapping a toe to my favorite Bette Midler album. Thighs and Whisper. Now I know what you're thinking as you lie there snuggling up with your bear. You're thinking, how do I know you're not just a jibber in this jab to win more of my gay business? Well, you don't.
But what you should know is that I love all gay people, always. And we're open on Sundays.
That's right. The only church the Colonel attends on Sunday is the Church of Chicken. Not to be confused with Church's Chicken, whom I hear, unlike myself, hate gays.
We all know that when it comes to the chicken of America, I prefer the white meat to the dark. But never in my 140 years on this earth have I ever harmed a gay. Hell, I prefer to see the world the way my hormone-loaded, antibiotically engineered chickens do. Without gender. Her beaks. Her butthole.
Where's the game? We're even issuing a table dance mandate at participating locations. Only the pocket squares of a gentleman can be used as a banana hammock.
Hell, I don't actually give a shit. Gay or not, you're all just a bunch of big old money mouths walking around talking and eating. But if you have to pick one chicken chain, why not pick us? I know their service is better, but we got those balls.
If you want the gayest chicken, you have to visit me.
Yeah, KFC. We got those bowls. God. John Goodman is a sure enough genius. Because maybe lost in all of this is the fact that whether it's churches or Chick-fil-A or KFC or Bojangles and Popeyes, you don't want to know where them chickens done come from. It's all just the same fast food garbage with different branding. Right? Yeah. So, you know, just for your consideration. Listen, it is Friday on the front porch, and I'm not going to sit here and filibuster all night long. It's about 27 minutes before the hour. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Let's get it started early and light them all up and just have a rousing evening's conversation. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. Good to finally talk to you.
Good to finally talk to you.
This is Roy from Atlanta, and I wanted to let you know that this is only the tip of the iceberg. I've been denied jobs for not being a regular churchgoer. I got fired once because my girlfriend was from Brazil, and the boss said he was not going to allow any of that interracial stuff to go on his job.
You're kidding.
I got canned that day, and there is no recourse. Zero. I don't care who you call or what you say. They all have the right to do it, especially in these right-to-work states and especially in these days when everyone is a contractor.
Oh, right. Yes, absolutely, a contractor.
They own you, lock, stock, and barrel. And I swear, they'll ask you, I don't want anyone working for me who's not a churchgoer. I don't want anyone working for me who's not a Baptist or this or that. You can't date black girls. You can't be friends with a black person. And this, she wasn't black. She was from Brazil, for Pete's sake. But even still, that's what you run into, and especially in Georgia. And as I drove past my local Chick-fil-A today, I can report that there were no one out there kissing.
Naturally, yeah.
And I think that the local police would have probably given them some problems if they were.
Well, I mean, let's take it the next step, Roy. The local police would have been called.
The local police would have been called, and I know who they would have arrested also. Arrested the guy's kissing, or the lady's kissing, whatever.
Because I'm sure there's some sort of a statute that's, you know, a million years old on the books of Georgia going back to the James Oglethorpe colony that probably applies.
I'll bet there is, and they have a real funny way of being able to interpret things differently at need here. Makes me sick.
Oh, yeah, in the moment. It's kind of like that obstructing an officer charge that's so often flung about. You know, that can apply to everything from just sitting on the ground and not getting up when told to get up to delivering the officer a cup of coffee he doesn't deem to be sufficiently hot.
It's gotten better than that. There's now a charge conspiracy to obstruct an officer. So if you were just thinking about obstructing the officer, or if he thinks you were thinking about obstructing him.
Yeah, it reminds me of that Homeland Security law that got passed, what, March?
The one
where Homeland Security can designate a...
An American is a terrorist, yeah, for any reason.
Right, right.
That's scary.
All you have to do is knowingly walk into it.
Yeah, that is. Bob, it's really good to talk to you. I enjoy your program every night. I really do. Thank you so much for being there.
Oh, it's an absolute joy to hear from you anytime. Please.
Have a good evening.
You too. Take care. He's right. Wow. First time caller. Awesome. This is part of a set piece. The oppression of people based upon whom they love or care about. The oppression of people based upon skin tone, gender, age, level of ability in right-to-work states and in some that are, I mean, West Virginia, for instance, is not a right-to-work state. But that doesn't, no, it's not. But the law of this state, for instance, says that employers and employees are on equal footing. And what they mean by that is that an employer may fire you for any reason or no reason. But employer and employee are on equal footing. Because the way we balance that ignorance is by saying that an employee can quit the employer for any reason or no reason. Somehow I can't quite make that balance, can you? Drives me a little crazy. Because the employee quitting for any reason or no reason is far less likely to happen because the employee probably needs the check and therefore will put up with any amount of abuse. Whereas the employer doesn't even have to put up with abuse. Doesn't have to put up with anything. Just goodbye now. Michael writing in, Herb's free speech. Bob, I think what Herb, the Chick-fil-A apologists, and the religion persecution complex industry in general are saying and have been saying for years is this. They want their freedom of speech and freedom of religion, by God, but everyone else should just shut the F up about it now. The hell with everyone else's freedom to speak back, freedom of association, or freedom to peaceably assemble. The hell with all of that. If you exercise your freedoms, we'll just claim you're trampling on our freedom of speech or freedom of religion, because we refuse, by God, refuse, in the name of Jesus, to take an ounce of personal responsibility for what we say or do. In a nutshell, they want their rights without any responsibility. Now, if you ever have a cup of coffee in law school, they'll tell you that there are rights and there are duties. And that they usually come in a package. If you've got a right, there's probably a concomitant duty somewhere wandering around. But you hear nothing from these babies of the right wing, these hateful, spoiled babies. But their rights, when no one is trampling them. The whole argument over Cheek Fila is the question of whether or not a certain segment of the population and those who stand with them have the right to speak out about it, about the bigotry manifested by that corporation's head, about the bigotry he manifests by giving millions, literally millions of dollars to hate groups and to call for anyone of good conscience to boycott and have nothing to do with such an organization. Oh, no. Oh, no. See, you don't have that right. The rights all belong to the right wing. Why do you think it's called the right wing? They've got all the rights. And our duty is to accede to all of their rights. Kind of sickening, isn't it? Certainly doesn't smell like freedom. Assuming you can smell the freedom over the hot grease. I had a Facebook post the other day from our buddy Horst. And Horst offered up the following as a thought experiment, and I thought it might be good for us to consider that thought experiment. Because it could keep us going for a while. As soon as I run it down, it goes like this. Come on. This is too good not to share. You'll be glad I took the time to do this. Okay, here it is. Thought experiments. Thought experiment number one. If you found out that one of the Chick-fil-A restaurants, swamped by crowds of bigots on Wednesday, turned out to have been serving salmonella-tainted chicken, would you be more sympathetic to those sickened, or would you be more inclined to think that it served them right? Thought experiment number two, how awesome would it be if waffle fries turned people gay? I like thought experiment number one quite a bit, really. Because beyond salmonella, there's a real consideration. Now, all these friends of Jeebus done hustled right out to their local Chick-fil-A to get something fried in, what is it, peanut oil? Is that part of what makes them so allegedly yummy? That and the high fructose corn syrup and the corn starch and the powdered sugar that goes into the breading? Yeah. This stuff is not good for you. Even assuming that the chickens Chick-fil-A uses do have beaks and feet and gender and buttholes. Still not good for you. There's a quality of absurdity to this that just keeps on giving. And you know what? We have clearly established, I think, that if there is a God, God is a God of irony. What is it Tim Tebow sings? Our God is an ironic... No, he doesn't. By the way, Tim Tebow, no word on whether Tim Tebow went to get him a good heterosexual chicken sandwich. But he did show up shirtless for a quarterback's meeting. And Mark Sanchez is said to be outplaying him in early practices. NFL season will be soon upon us. Can't get here quick enough to suit me. But that list of toxic things that are in our chicken included salmonella and listeria and campylobacter and all kinds of icky stuff. I just about guarantee you there at the Chick-fil-A, they've got some sort of super industrial the decontamination section for the people who have to handle the raw chicken. So chime in with your answer to the thought experiment. If one of those bigots got themselves some E. coli 157H7 from eating a sacred Jeebus chicken sandwich, would you feel sorry for them, or would you feel like they were kind of begging for it? Because, you know, if they sold $30 million worth of chicken sandwiches yesterday, it was working overtime or day before. Some of those things may not have been properly cooked. Just saying. But one last thing, and it's not prayer meeting Wednesday or anything. But if you were dipped by the heel in the Bible, like I was as a child, still recovering, you might be perplexed and wonder why it is that if Dan Cathy is such a follower of Jesus, he's giving millions of dollars to very well-fed hate groups instead of giving his millions as, you know, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, suggested he do to the poor. I'm reckoning Dan Cathy doesn't lose any sleep over that verse where Yeshua said, give away everything you have to the poor and follow me. Couldn't do that, Jesus. Which, of course, is the same answer that the rich young man allegedly gave Jesus, as recounted in the Gospel of Matthew? So, you know, just file that under yet another thought experiment. The lines are filling up. You might want to go ahead and jump in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's Rochelle.
Well, hey, Rochelle, how are you?
I'm super, Rochelle.
I'm getting along.
Sorry to miss you this past week.
Oh, I am too. It's crazy up there.
Well, I was looking forward to checking out your swank tour bus and meeting your entourage.
You know what? The entourage had the week off, and the swank tour bus was in the it was in the shop, and you know we I didn't have my Hemi or nothing with me.
That's nice for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I missed the first 15 minutes of the program because my parents had the temerity to ask me to have dinner with them. But I don't know if you've drawn this parallel, but if you have already, I think it's worth drawing again. All this rights talk, I think you've forgotten the most important one, which is states' rights.
Oh, absolutely, states' rights, absolutely. It was recently announced by West Virginia's junior senator Blanche Manchin that West Virginia's Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. That blowing up mountains and poisoning babies in the womb is a matter of states' rights.
You're darn tootin' it is.
Just makes me want to get up and sing an anthem or maybe a couple of stanzas of God Bless the USA, them states' rights do.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I had not made that observation, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, that seems to pop up at interesting points in our country's history, doesn't it?
Rather uncomfortable ones, to say the least.
Yep.
You know, before a few hundred thousand people get slaughtered back in the 19th century, or before some folks get dogs turned on them and get beaten with truncheons in the 1960s. And, you know, now as death and poison and misery sort of waft down over Appalachian communities here, states' rights. Gotta love them.
Yeah, well, you know, not to be a big cynic about it, but I hope they put that on our gravestone.
You mean nationally? Died from states' rights?
Rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
States' rights got the better of them.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
It was all worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah, because who needs individual rights? And yet, Rochelle, at the same time, these right-wingers, they insist upon their individual rights at the expense of everyone else's.
Well, isn't that what rights mean?
Yeah, mine, not yours?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
It befuddles, it flummoxes, it generally just does my head in.
Yeah, mine as well. So try to make a joke out of it, and laugh that I do not weep.
Right, because there is that weeping thing, and you can't do that all the time. Well, I trust dinner was a good one.
Oh, it was excellent. Nothing like mom's cooking.
You mean no restaurant fare?
No, sorry, not even chicken.
Well, you're ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I don't even know what party that puts me in.
Well, I don't know. I think eating home cooked meals by Mama, that makes it sound like you got a whole bunch of family values, Rochelle.
I'm working them hard.
Good deal. Good deal. Well,
I was wondering if you wanted to chat about what happened at the Hobet Mine.
Absolutely. I went into it at some length on. The days begin to run together, but I talked about it extensively last night and made some mention of it in nights previous, but absolutely. What do you got?
What do I got? I was listening to what you had to say last night. Your critique of the use of this tactic, and I wanted to tell you that your point's well taken. First of all. It is a violent and potentially fatal situation, and it's actually good to hear that from someone who has kind of the same aims in this, but is not saying this kind of thing doesn't work just because they're afraid of conflict.
No, Rochelle, we know conflict here. We know it real well. It was several years ago down at a, and it wasn't even a protest. It was just a rally at Marsh Fork Elementary School. You probably know where that is.
I've heard some stories about that rally.
Yeah. I had the whole family there.
Wow.
And because, we feel like being Americans and everything, we ought to be able to stand together with like-minded individuals and put forward our ideas. And it was a great good time. The fiends of coal, however, showed up on their hardly rideable motorcycles and gunned their engines so nobody could hear the PA system, and sat there and unplugged the PA system. And at one point in time, my lovely wife was just wandering around the crowd when one of these strip miners' wives with two hands full, I mean two hands full of really, really top-notch, jaggedy Walmart rings on her fingers, put her hands together and from behind my wife drove them into her kidneys.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, awful. You know what? I actually think that in our nonviolent direct action trainings, that story might have been told.
If not, the thing is, that didn't just, maybe it was, but it also has been, it's happened to a lot of people.
Sure.
Because they like to strike from behind.
Sure. Those miners' wives, man.
Oh, they're meaner than the strip miners. I'm not kidding.
Absolutely. I gotta tell you a story. Most of the day on Saturday, I didn't know what the hell was going on.
Can I be so forward as to ask just where were you?
Where was I? I was driving.
Okay.
I was one of the drivers that took the people up onto the mine. Doors flew up. Nobody up there. Police were not informed about this situation. Did not manage to leak out. Doors flew open. People went up on the mine. We drove. We started driving off, and then of course we were stopped by West Virginia's finest, and took down IDs, took down license plates and stuff like that, and told us if they cut the car up there again, it'd be towed and the driver arrested. So, I was one of those people that couldn't get back to get our walkers, our people who were going to leave when ordered.
Oh, the people who were herded into the potential slaughter pen?
Precisely. But a little side story, and I got to say, first of all, anything that I dealt with that day was nothing compared to what, my siblings, my family had to put up with on that. I can't watch that footage, actually. It horrifies me. It makes me real upset to see what they had to go through. Now, of course, there's plenty of people out there who say they brought it on themselves, and in fact, that was kind of the point,
Well, I mean, there's truth to that, Rochelle. I mean, you do not enter into nonviolent civil disobedience with some idea that things are going to work out nicely.
Agreed. Absolutely. But that doesn't make it any easier to watch.
No, it does. I mean, I was sitting here just red-faced.
Mm-hmm.
With really unhealthy fury,
mm-hmm.
watching the video as I played the audio of it last night, and that was the fourth or fifth time I'd seen it.
Wow, you're stronger than I am. I watched it once and was that was enough for me. So yeah, so the original idea was to go to a public place and wait until our folks got off the mine and pick them up. But of course, we couldn't do that. So what we ended up doing is we ended up going up the road to a gas station because some people were getting low on gas. And, the organizers jumped out and started furiously trying to figure out how we were going to get our people off the mine. And as it turned out, at this particular gas station, there just happened to be a miner's wife.
No, of course.
Yep. A little blonde thing. And,
aren't they all?
She got on the horn.
Yeah.
And called in her boys. And
was she real nice and mouthy into the bargain?
She was less mouthy than just, had a heck of a mean stare. I've run into the ones with the mouthy ones. But she just had that mean girl thing going on. But you know what? It was so fascinating to watch what happened. At the same time, I was scared. I didn't like what was shaping up there. Because more and more fellows showed up in their big roaring trucks and, stuff like that. But not a single one of them pulled up there and jumped out and came over and confronted us. No, they had to go to the other side of the parking lot, hang around with each other for a while.
Work up some courage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe wait for word to come from higher-ups as to what they should do.
Absolutely, but I'll tell you who was the higher-up on scene there. The miner's wife, she was, I get the feeling, I'm speculating here, but I think that about half those guys really would have preferred just not to do anything. But they had her there, and she was watching.
And as long as she, I don't want to get all academic or anything, Rochelle, but you probably know where I'm going. They couldn't not because she was there.
Precisely.
Yeah, what kind of man are you? What did I marry?
Yeah, that's the feeling I was getting. So that was, in sociological retrospect, now that I'm sitting in, pretty in my Northern Virginia palace, that was interesting to watch. And, they couldn't all come over at once. They had to take two steps forward, one step back. At one point, one of them brought a...
God, it sounds like junior high school.
Doesn't it, though? That is, last year when I was on the march on Blair Mountain, one of the organizers said, it's just like the mean girls in high school grew up. And I think that that's entirely appropriate because, from what I know about kind of the local power structure is, you got your managers and your co-operators, and they can leave at any time and go anywhere and do just fine. But the it's the people with the best pay and mining jobs who have the most to lose in that situation. They've got the house, the ATV, the truck, and stuff like that.
Don't forget the tanning bed.
No, I won't. I won't. Couldn't possibly. And, you know, so they feel like they have the most to lose. So they're at the top of the heap there. So it really is like the popular crowd is still in command in that area. So, yeah.
And I have to commend you because, you know, I've been doing this show for a lot of years now, Rochelle, and mm-hmm. I don't think any person has ever used the phrase in sociological retrospect.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry.
No. Don't apologize. That's a beautiful thing.
I let myself go there. I showed my hand.
Oh, no. Let the flag fly.
All right.
Because it is the tendency to try to view these things through some sort of rose-collared Pollyanna-ish glasses that yields trouble. And I don't want to, I'm not trying to be overly negative about this, but when people try to discuss events like what happened last Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and to do it by creating the notorious false equivalence of both sides do it,
yeah,
then it absolutely negates any hope, dangerous word I learned last night, it negates any possibility of understanding the dynamics of why these things happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, you know what? When I was sitting in the waiting room or in the entranceway or what do you call it, lobby of Senator Jay Rockefeller's office yesterday, talking to his energy and environment legislative assistant, Mr. Patrick Bond, he let drop a phrase something like that. Well, you know, there have been a lot of accusations flying on Twitter about this, and, you know, this kind of thing's been going on for a while, protests and other things, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's real helpful.
Right. When one side is screaming obscenities, threatening people, and the other side is being anything but.
Mm.
You know, there's no equivalence there. There's no both sides do it there. I mean, anybody who would argue that there's some level of equivalence between peaceful, nonviolent protesters and obscenity-screaming strip miners and their associated family and whatnot, anybody who would make that argument it would also make the argument in a domestic violence situation that she probably, that there was a reason he slapped her.
Mm.
Because it comes from the same mindset, Rochelle, does it not?
Mm. Yeah, I suppose. I could see that. I could buy that for what I got in my pocket.
Yeah.
So those, it's interesting. Actually, I did not feel as unsafe in last Saturday's situation, although in retrospect I probably should have, as I did in the March on Blair Mountain. Just being out on the road and having people drive back and forth and scream at you all day long, and you don't have the safety and comfort of a car or something like that to be in. But I took a day off from the March on Blair Mountain, and I spent a day in the kitchen washing dishes with many fine people, among them Bev May.
Yes.
From Kentuckians for the Commonwealth.
Right.
And she pointed out to me that, when it comes to women, showing the butt is a long and proud tradition when they feel threatened in that particular area.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, and that made me feel better. It made me, for some reason, it just made me feel less like, I certainly didn't know that I certainly knew that it wasn't that they were yelling those things particularly at Rochelle C. Brown. But they were just yelling to yell.
Yeah, because, and again, without going too far down the analytical rabbit hole, they feel threatened.
They do.
And when you feel threatened, and you combine that with the toxic elements of ignorance and fear, ain't nothing good going to come of it.
Right.
And but I have to say that one of the things I did appreciate about the messaging up on the demolition site,
mm-hmm.
be damned if I'll call it a mine. My granddaddy was a miner.
Yeah.
They were talking some about what's being done to the workers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's people there are people retired from that company who stand to lose their pensions, not because of you. And not because of me advocating against mountaintop removal, but because Patriot Coal has absolutely what, pillaged itself from the inside out in the name of executive salaries, so that they've driven themselves into the ground.
Right, right.
And that's, you know, that I guess that's the $64 question is, what is it, what has happened here? It has not always been the case that people working for mine companies felt all warm and fuzzy about their non-union company.
I know it's that's something I still am trying to figure out, is how they've done this brilliant thing to where they have gone from being a outside exploiter, and they still are, but to retelling a story to where they are, you know, the best hope for Appalachian culture.
Yeah, it's all there is, and there can never be anything but coal.
No.
It's like the on the first video that came out who said, if you asked my 4-year-old right now, he'd say he wanted to be just like his daddy. Well, how many 4-year-olds do you know that don't want to be like daddy?
Well, I would have asked her. I mean, I wouldn't have engaged, period.
Right.
But then, you know, that's just me. I would have asked, well, is that what you want for your kid?
Constantly in fear of losing your livelihood. I mean, there are layoffs that went down up at a company called Fola Coal over in Clay County, Rochelle.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going up there protesting.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, no. But it's run by Consol, and Consol's laid off a couple of hundred folks because of the market price of coal.
Right.
Now, the last I checked, none of us activists, none of us human rights, none of us people who are demanding basic human rights and the right not to be poisoned have any impact whatsoever on the global market price of coal. But somehow, even when the company, and it's amazing because you can see it in action, even when the coal company tells them, we're laying you off because of market forces, the answer of the laid off guy is, damn tree huggers.
Well, you know, a smelly guy in dreadlocks is a lot easier to yell at than market forces.
Simply, if we assume for a moment that the guy in dreadlocks is in a place where everybody else doesn't have them.
Exactly, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, and when I say smelly guy in dreadlocks, I mean, you know, my brother in the struggle.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, here's the way I look at why, you know, why our particular, you know, group did what we did, which is that they're going to stop mining coal in Appalachia one of these days.
Yes.
If you just wait a generation, there will be no more coal mining in Appalachia.
I think that's a fair assessment.
It'll all be gone, or it won't be worth the price of, you know, of extracting it anymore. But I just can't sit back and just let that happen, personally.
Well, it's not, yeah, exactly. And what we have to consider is the two alternatives. There's stop mountaintop removal right now.
Mm-hmm.
In which case we can begin now to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's let the coal industry run roughshod, just run riot, frankly, because, you know, there was on Saturday there was a demonstration and a riot. The peaceful, nonviolent people, hint, were not doing the rioting.
Mm-hmm.
But if you let the coal industry run riot as long as it wants to, and then when all the coal's gone, they just pack up and leave, and they, goodbye now.
Mm-hmm.
So long. Thanks for all the fish. then what's left is a mess that the people who are left with the mess are by definition unable to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
No amount of goodwill will replace the number of mountains that are gone by then.
Right. Well, you know, I have to say that anyone who's going to make the argument that, you know, you get rid of the coal companies and you somehow do damage to Appalachian culture or something like that, I just tell them, go to what used to be Cayford, West Virginia.
Yeah.
And see how much culture's going on there.
Yeah, because the answer for those who haven't been there or seen it is none.
Right.
Yeah, and you can, you know, the ghost towns dot southern and northern West Virginia. You know, they're trying to open up what, for all intents and purposes, is a mountaintop removal complex in Monongalia County now.
Mm.
That's up there by my alma mater, you know, Harvard on the Monongahela. West Virginia University. And it's unthinkable. You know, right. Mountaintop removal is something that happens below the Little Kanawha, you know, to those southern West Virginia people. Because there's a lot of people in northern West Virginia that just don't think of themselves as being the same state.
I've noticed that.
And, you know, Judy Bonds told me when I first got into the struggle, she said, Bob, we have to stop it in the Coal River Valley. Because if we don't stop it here, it's going to come to you.
Mm.
Bless her heart, she said, you know, she died of cancer, and she said, mountaintop removal is a cancer in Appalachia, and cancer always spreads unless it's stopped. And she said, mark my words, it will come to you, Bob, because she knew I was in Fayette County.
Mm-hmm.
And it has. And now it has leapfrogged the Little Kanawha River, and they're talking about it in Monongalia County.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Monongalia County, where Morgantown, West Virginia, was once named one of the most livable cities in the United States.
Hmm.
Ain't gonna be no more.
No. Good place to die.
Yeah. And you know, there are the human health issues are the ones that really speak most plainly to me, Rochelle. And when I contemplate the dust off of any one of these 5 million pounds per day worth of blasting that happens here, and you think about, for instance, medical science approximations of how much of any one of these given toxins you should have in your body before you start worrying, the numbers are tiny. I mean, right. They use Greek letters to express them. They're so tiny.
Right.
And if you're in Charleston, West Virginia, and you don't hear the blasting, you're still breathing it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Beckley and you don't hear the blasting, you're still breathing it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're rafting the new river and all you see is beautiful greenery,
mm-hmm.
you're still breathing it.
Yep.
And there's no amount of it that is deemed good for you. No matter how little you've breathed, it's all deemed toxic. And these polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons that are coming off of the incomplete combustion of the diesel fuel and the ammonium nitrate and the microparticulated silica dust, it goes all over. It's in the soil. We can't eat our gardens.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a reason for an outcry. And I guess the question that I'm putting, and when I put this question, it is not disrespectfully offered.
I understand.
Is given the danger, and given the fact that all the fines go into the coffers of a wholly corrupt system, in other words, hard scraped together activist dollars are propping up a court system that serves only to oppress us.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of analysis needs to go on before whatever action may come next?
That's a good question, and I think the answers that I always turn to is the event that got me into this to begin with. I mean, I always sort of knew that mountaintop removal existed. It was a bad thing. I spent a lot of time in the mountains of Virginia, was upset about it. But I went to the Appalachia Rising Convergence in D.C. in late 2010.
Oh, you mean Appalachia Rising? Yeah. September 27th. I was there.
You were there? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So was I. And I saw two things. First of all, I saw people, and this is actually what I went to discover. I wanted to see if this enterprise stopping mountaintop removal was just some sort of like paternalistic BS, you know, people continuing the great tradition of going to Appalachia and telling people there that what's best for them. And I saw people from Appalachia get up on the stage and say, come to Appalachia and make it a better place.
Yeah.
So that was one thing. And these actions, particularly the RAMPS campaign, the important thing for me is that they are, you know, it's the local people who come up with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the local people who decide what they feel is, you know, what they feel they need, the kind of support they need from allies. I'm not going to call us outsiders. I refuse to do that. Because that's what the Friends of Coal are calling us.
Right. No. And that's what the White Citizens Council called the Freedom Riders. Yeah, outside agitators.
Precisely. But here's another thing. I went and I watched all those people getting arrested in front of the White House, and I thought, well, what the hell good is this? And then I realized what the hell good it was when it showed up on the front page of the Washington Post the next day.
Yeah.
Because all of these, all these people had, it always looks good for people to get arrested. But, the whole idea is to take, people like me, relatively privileged, people of varying levels of privilege. I mean, we have people of all kinds. You know, you just need to look at the list of arrestees and you can see that people come all, from all kind of backgrounds.
But, oh, no, I stood there and watched the buses get filled.
Yeah, you know what was great about that at that arrest extravaganza is my ex-boyfriend was actually working as a park police officer, and he drove the van away. I thought that was great.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. And you know what, actually, we did, my friends and I, on the way back this weekend, on our way home from all this nonsense, we actually stopped by his house in the middle of the night and stole the Gadsden flag off his mailbox.
Oh, no, not a Gadsden flag.
That's neither here nor there, is it now?
No, and nobody's listening.
Yeah. So I realized, much to my dismay, that does get attention from the outside, unfortunately. It's fine when thousands, millions of people are dying slowly and terribly of these just horrifying illnesses, and their children can't breathe and have birth defects and stuff like that. But we don't care. We don't care about that. But when a bunch of people who are the kind of people that get called, people with bright futures, bright young things, go and get themselves arrested and put themselves in danger, that gets attention. And I wish that weren't the case. So, in my case, I'm not in the inner circle of ramps. I trust and I like those people. I trust them to be intermediaries in this and of course it's my decision whether to take part in these things or not. But, that is why I support and got involved in this, in something that is, a little further along the dangerous end of stuff. Because it gets the attention.
Do you think it is? I mean, I'm asking about this particular action.
Right.
You're right. It was on the Appalachia Rising was on the Washington Post front page the next day.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some limited writing in the Charleston Gazette.
Right.
It's gotten some attention inside the the media that is predisposed to writing favorably about this issue.
That was very diplomatic of you, Bob.
I try very hard to be accurate in my language.
Right.
But the for-profit media have been staying away in droves.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that, I mean, and it's sad. This is a sad commentary on CBS, ABC, NBC, Jesus, Radio Rwanda, Fox, CNN, MSNBC. No coverage. No, the coverage I saw that addressed this on a nationwide basis came from Russian television, RTV, Rochelle.
Right. Yeah, they interviewed Dustin.
And it just made me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, it is sometimes as if Appalachia does not exist.
No. It's almost like it's a fairyland, a place to tell stories about. Stories about
food. Yeah, leprechauns, unicorns, hillbillies.
Yeah, strange place. Well, yes. You're right. You're absolutely right. But I got to say, listening to people who I love and trust, I don't know how much you're going to like or approve of this, but this is they see this as the first step of something. This was kind of a, this had a lot of, this was pushing beyond where things have gone before, and there is an intention to push farther.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt.
And so maybe this one is not pulling in. Although I've seen, just in my discussions of this online and stuff like that, I've noticed some people take an interest to who haven't before.
Where does it, and I'm not asking you to speak for anyone, Rochelle.
Right.
And I am not by any stretch of the imagination being argumentative either.
No. You know what? I think that this is an excellent, excellent conversation to have, because when I tell people I do this, I get one of two reactions. I either get this odd look of, like, wow, that's amazing, or I get people say that's ridiculous, that's BS. You get whatever you deserve.
Well, I fall far more toward the amazing end of the continuum.
But I think it's good to have that mixed, you know, that challenge that from people who, you know, from people who are know the issues
and the question I want to put forward is, okay, this was the beginning of something.
Mm-hmm.
What is the end of something?
That's another good question. You mean as far as like where, you know, what we'd like to see?
I mean, ultimately, anything that anyone I know has ever engaged in with regard to this struggle has been, you know, the end of mountaintop removal.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the question is, how do you get from point A to point end of mountaintop removal?
Right.
With this process. There are a number of sort of sub questions beneath this. One is, you know, there's obviously a money issue. And that money issue in this instance relates to the ability to pay those bonds that, again, go either into the pocket of a bail bondsman or into the coffers of the state of West Virginia. And if there's ever a fine paid and the court costs, they do go into the coffers of the state of West Virginia.
Right.
I have a real problem with Feed the Beast.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, no one that I'm aware of who risked arrest on Saturday was a person of independently wealthy means.
Not to my knowledge either.
Yeah. So, it takes help to come up with bail money.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 20, if the same deal obtains for the next group, who apparently have to wait until the 7th of August, which just makes my head just want to explode, because
mm-hmm.
there should have been a petition put before the circuit court, and to my knowledge it never was.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this, I have no idea how you can plead guilty to trespassing and receive probation on a charge that never carried jail time to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
That just baffles me. I mean, that's like getting sold down the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's being abused by the legal process, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about needing to come up with, if the same deal goes through, 20 times 500.
Right.
So that's, what, $10,000?
Sounds right.
Straight into the coffers of the state of West Virginia.
Yeah, that, I can't make anything good out of that.
No, and with every one of these actions, if there's 20 people, and that is a likely outcome,
mm-hmm.
How many $10,000 are there out there?
Wow, you know, I actually think that the state of West Virginia should be rolling out the welcome mat for us. They should be glad we're coming.
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, yeah.
Center.
Yeah, if this thing goes on long enough, it will wind up being as profitable to the coffers of the state of West Virginia as the coal severance tax.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? They're always asking us how we're supposed to, you know, how they're supposed to transition. Maybe they could just live off of, you know, fees paid by protesters.
right.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't.
And I don't ask it to be a nattering nabob of negativity. I hope you. I really want to be clear about that.
I understand that. For me, you know, I cannot really, you know, the money is definitely an issue, but ultimately just I don't want to say that, you know, just doing something is important, you know, just something to exercise the guilt or the anger or something like that, but I really do believe in my heart of hearts that, you know, engaging in this and challenging this on such a basic level will ultimately be worth what, you know, will go into the maw of the beast. And that's the best I can do.
I understand that. Mm-hmm. And I guess ultimately the next question is, and if you're listening to some of the things I said previously, you know, the only thing that's going to stop mountaintop removal is either executive action through the administrative agencies or legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be something that triggers an enhanced and increased and intense awareness of the legislation.
Right, right. I know
historically what did that in the fairly recent past, because it was just late June that I was in Selma, Alabama, and I had folks who were there in 1965 tell me the story of how the Selma to Montgomery march began.
Mm-hmm.
And it began because initially folks had been organizing around the relentless refusal to allow persons of color to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the cops cracked down in the next county over to Dallas County. And when they started beating on an old man and his wife, their Korean War vet son came over to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when an Alabama state trooper put a bullet through his brain. And it was in the desire to carry his casket from Selma to Montgomery and set it on the Capitol steps that the Selma to Montgomery march began, was born.
Mm-hmm.
In the aftermath of that, the decision was made not to carry his casket, but to have a march. And that's how Bloody Sunday happened, when they were met by vicious force by the state police just across the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Right.
People were beaten near unto death. Mm-hmm. Some were left for dead.
Mm-hmm.
In the aftermath of that, for instance, a woman of extreme goodwill who had traveled from Michigan named Viola Liuzzo.
Yep.
Was had some Klansmen with an FBI informant in the back seat pull aside her on a two-lane road and put a bullet through her head.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that bloodshed ultimately led to the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And I'll say this plainly and candidly, Rochelle. And I've said it to the Horn family before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't spend a lot of time being fearful of things. Fear will cripple you, just as it has crippled these strip miners.
Mm-hmm.
But I do fear for the safety of folks doing nonviolent civil disobedience in West Virginia. And we are engaged in a struggle for basic human rights, civil rights, for people who have to breathe, bathe in, wash in the profiteering mountaintop removal coal industry's filth. We live in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm terrified that somebody's going to get hurt. You know, I've seen a woman cross a line into nonviolent protesters and hit Judy Bonds in the head at a time when cancer was likely already growing in her brain that was probably put there by the years she spent living next to a coal prep plant.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there the day that the skinhead mountaintop removal worker threatened to slash the throats of a man and, and his four-year-old son up on Cayford
mm-hmm.
at the July 4th picnic.
Right.
They're ramping it up, not mm-hmm. down. My dear friend Vernon and a few others had to be escorted by police away from a simple hearing by the Army Corps of Engineers in Charleston, West Virginia. And as that video noted from the sergeant who spoke to, what was the young man's name? Jonathan?
You're lucky
you're in this car because they'll kill you and throw you down a mine shaft, boy, and nobody will ever find you. Well, that's shades of Neshoba County, Mississippi.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I was thinking about that as you were discussing that last night. I said to Dr. John before I left town, it was like you and I were trading places for the last week. I went to your neck of the woods, and you came to my neck of the woods. And you know that area a lot better than I do. You have experience of it, lifelong experience of it, and I have lifelong experience around here too.
Yes.
Of watching a million things be born, live a while, and die, in terms of trying to get things to happen in this town in D.C. So I think that, you know, I'm going to spend the summer bird dogging my representative to get him to try and, you know, sign on to the AIC Act.
And who, just out of curiosity, who is yours?
Frank Wolf.
Okay, good luck.
10th District Congressman for life. He has been representing this district since longer than I've been alive.
Right.
I used to be represented by the fine, if occasionally not very wise in terms of his public speech, Jim Moran. But
districts got shifted around, and of course Jim Moran is on the bill.
He is. He's good like that. Sometimes he really sticks his foot in it in public, but I think, you know, I think he's a good man ultimately. And you talk about kind of what was necessary or what led to, I mean, I don't know if it was necessary. I wonder this a lot, if it really was possible, it really was necessary for all those heads to get busted and all those bullets to be shot in order for the Voting Rights Act to get passed.
Certainly no one who was pursuing the simple right to vote wanted it to happen.
Sure. Yeah, and no one who there's always a couple of kind of aggressive people in every group you get that's going to be a little rowdy like this, but I don't really think anyone that I spent the week with, you know, up in, you know, or, you know, in West Virginia is looking to get beat up, wants to see.
No, I don't think anybody. It's no fun.
Yeah, that we know and love.
The arrest process on a catch and release. Okay, I mean. You talk about Appalachia Rising in D.C., you know, mm-hmm. spending the rest of your day waiting to be processed on a catch and release by the Capitol Police is no fun.
No.
Or the Park Service.
they're the fierce ones, man, Park Police. They're used to this kind of stuff. I think that ultimately, I really hate to say this, but knowing how easy it is for things in D.C. to disappear, to die, to die slow deaths in committee, whatnot, that unless, I got to tell you something, if I see a bill go racing through Congress and everybody loves it and it passes like a son of a gun, I worry.
Yeah, odds are it's a piece of crap. It's the Patriot Act. Yeah.
Knowing what I know about, you know, about the way this town works, I don't think that something like the AIC Act is going to pass without something very dramatic happening. I hate to say that.
I understand that. From my standpoint, and I realize that it's perhaps a bit pastoral or prosaic, I think babies being born without the ability to draw one decent breath is pretty dramatic.
So do I.
And I know you do.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that's why we're hammering this message of human health and civil rights and human rights as hard as we are.
Yeah.
We want to make it morally impossible to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, we think we can. We think we can.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we need a lot more support. We need a lot more people calling a lot more members of Congress. We've got a lot more traveling to do. It probably goes without saying that it will have to be reintroduced in the next Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there are impediments to progress that have names. Names like Nick Rahal.
Mm-hmm.
Names like Joe Manchin.
Right.
But my problem is that I come back to what I said, Michelle, the only solution to this problem is either executive or legislative, because we've seen what happens in the judicial branch.
Right.
I mean, Judge Hayden's decision of many years back now was brilliantly written, and it was overturned by a bunch of right-wing so-called conservative jurists on the Fourth Circuit, which used to be known, and may, I don't know if it still is or not, but used to be known as the single most conservative district in the United States, including the district that serves Alabama Stan.
Mm-hmm.
So the judiciary is largely out. The only real lawsuits that are happening around mountaintop removal right now are the ones that generate attorney's fees for pollution discharges that then allow the pollution once mitigated within the meaning of the regulation allows the mountaintop removal job to continue.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the other argument, going back to something that we talked about previously, it can be economically ended. And it will be economically ended when there is no more coal to put on the boats to send to China or India or wherever. Because even if we end every last bit of coal-fired power, and this is something that I've had a hard time getting across to people, if we end every bit of coal-fired electrical generation in the United States, they will still do mountaintop removal because there is a massive global market for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because India and China are on an absolute coal-fired power plant building binge.
Yep. And you want to talk about some shitty conditions in mines.
Yeah.
China,
Pakistan. Mm-hmm. That's the other element of some of my thinking on this, is that we will have much more success when we are linking up American, hillbilly arm to Indian arm to Pakistani arm to Bangladeshi arm to Chinese arm. You get the idea.
Right.
To Colombian arm. And we start understanding that this is, in fact, a global struggle. Because going underground is going out of fashion.
Hmm.
Eventually, they will figure out a way. One of the fellows from Australia said this past Saturday in D.C., he said, your fracking technology was developed in the United States, but it's already here in Oz.
Hmm.
It's already come to Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing will happen with mountaintop removal. If they can figure out a way, if they haven't already, to employ less Colombians to blow up the Andes. If they can figure that out, they'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
The open pit mine the disgusting open pit lignite mine that I saw in Germany just gave me the shivering horrors. And it was inspiring as can be to have met, there was an entire little forest Occupy tree city going on. not far from the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't planning on going until they were taken away.
Which I'm sure they were.
Well, not yet. I guess it'll be October.
Okay.
But, you know, they're trying. And that's what, you know, that's what I can say about all these nonviolent actions is it's trying. It matters to one degree or another. It has some impact.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't think, and the reason we're working in D.C. is because we have worked ourselves to the bone in Charleston.
Sure.
Charleston doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from the governor to the dog catcher, they don't care.
Yeah.
You know, when we proposed a wind farm in western Raleigh County that would have given millions of dollars more to Raleigh County's tax base over 40 years, they still chose the mountaintop removal operation that would give them dramatically less over the course of 10 or 15.
Right. Well, that's something people often ask me, you know, who are not quite so familiar with the way things work there. I'm not saying I'm an expert either, but people look on me as one. You know, I've spent some time, you know, thinking and being in that area. They say, you know, what are you trying to put in its place? And I know there's some really good people trying to put some things in this place, but I've heard a lot of stories of people being, you know, trying to try something else, like that wind farm, or like a, you know, a local business of some kind who have been chased out of town, by the coal companies. And so while I would like to, you know, to say, okay, you know, move forward equally with chasing, or with getting rid of this, you know, of this exploitation, while in the meantime, equally or even to a greater degree, replacing it with something more positive and ultimately more beneficial for the people of the area, I'm not sure it's possible. I'm not sure that it can go forward equally. That there just might need to be. I mean, it's not going to happen without getting rid of those extractive industries first, and I don't think it's possible to have them move along with equal speed, unfortunately.
Yeah, some of the things we've talked about in the past, you know, an Appalachian Marshall Plan. You know, we could if a tiny chunk of what went out as stimulus had been designated for Appalachia, mountaintop removal is declared over. Well, the damage is so great, Rochelle, that every single mountaintop remover working now, and probably some who aren't, could have been employed in doing nothing but reclamation work.
Right.
You know, as paid for by we the people.
Mm-hmm.
And they never would have, you know, and you know they're talking about, we're going to put us on welfare. How am I going to pay for my tanning bed bulbs? You know, that kind of stuff. And I'm being
right.
A little bit facetious, but.
Yeah, I get you.
Those are the arguments that are made, and I understand when you say that the two. Look, you can't stitch up the external wound until you stop the bleeding on the sucking chest wound inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suppose it becomes a. And the thing that scares me most of all is that stasis somehow obtains. And what does happen is that mountaintop removal does end someday, but it only ends on the coal industry's terms when they can take all of their profits and march on out of state.
Right.
And leave us high and dry, and we will still have a political class here who will thank them for doing it to us.
Well, let me make sure that, Do you think, and I'm not, this is not intended to be a provocative question, but do you think that the kind of things that happen Saturday does more harm than good?
I think at best it's a wash.
Okay.
So the answer to your question directly is no. I do not think it does more harm than good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a net wash.
Right.
I think it's very energizing for the people who are in the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is really exciting for people who are outside Appalachia and see it happening,
mm-hmm.
who support the struggle.
Right.
I don't think it has, you know, as long as the for-profit media remain the for-profit media, I don't think it has much impact inside inside couch-bound America's homes.
Mm-hmm. Well, personally, I'm going to say something real nasty right now. I don't think anything ever happens, you know, that involves couch-bound America, but that's that's just where I'm at in my process right now.
No, I think you're right, and it takes it takes something profound to break America's sort of flitting attention span away from the latest episode of Dancing with the Millionaires or whatever's on television.
Right. Well, I think what I'm going to say is this. I don't want to say something stupid like, well, you do your thing and I'll do mine and we'll see.
No, everybody is going to do their thing.
Yeah, or something stupid like that. I think that, you know, I don't know at this point. I don't know whether, I sincerely don't know whether what we did any good. And I'll admit that. We're in uncharted waters here. That much is clear. And actually the way that it's unfolded has been, you know, just the one thing that has happened is that, one thing you can be sure of is that it's nothing anybody expected. I mean, certainly, you know, from the minute they told us that, you know, we couldn't come back and get our people, that, you know, all plans went to hell. You know, the response has been unexpected and stuff like that. So I don't know. I don't know whether what we did was, you know, did help or what have you. But I do think that it was worth doing. And I certainly hope that the lessons that come out of it can be incorporated in the future, whether that's not to do anything else or whether it's...
Well, no, I think there are certainly... and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Rochelle.
No, I'm just... Not anyway.
I think these things are always about process.
Right.
And I think, based on other civil disobedience actions that I've seen in the past, I think you need to have some sort of a bail fund going in.
Mm-hmm.
Just like back when unions were militantly standing up for their workers' rights, they had a strike fund.
Right.
You have to be able to feed and care for and house and shelter and rescue your people in need. And I don't mean your people. I speak generally.
Yeah, I get it.
Because it's agonizing to see people of goodwill trapped in a wholly corrupt judicial system who don't even have a decent lawyer to help them through the process.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of that battle of Saratoga wicket, though, isn't it? You can't get the support until you show you've done something, and you can't do something, or you can't, you know, really...
Yeah, true, but something has been done now. So now is the time to start building a bail fund.
Right.
Now is the time to have the conversation with some lawyer somewhere, and that's part of the fundraising. You know, they need to be able to pay a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
If a lawyer will not work for free, and that lawyer needs to be, and I mean no disrespect, that lawyer needs to be somebody whose province is civil disobedience, whose province is the criminal law, not a good-hearted pro bono lawyer who does real estate mostly.
Right.
Because the days of the Atticus Finch meat and potatoes lawyer are pretty much long gone.
Yeah.
You know, you're not gonna make your bills as a lawyer taking hickory nuts in payment for your working on somebody's entailment. So I hope that makes a little bit of sense.
That absolutely makes sense, and I think, you know, I think at the end of the day, and I'm sure that this is patently obvious, is that, you know, I think we both agree that neither of us wants to see heads get busted.
I am mortally afraid of it.
As you know, I'm probably not as afraid just out of sheer ignorance. I'll admit that. When I've been in that climate, you know, and I've had the people around me, you know, my people, whatever that means, I felt reasonably safe and whatnot, but that, I'm sure, is pure naivete.
Well, I'll tell you a little story.
All right.
I'm just full of them, Rochelle.
Yeah.
I live where I live, and people know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't make any secret of the fact that I oppose mountaintop removal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wear my Save the Endangered Hillbilly T-shirt down to the Rippy Mart.
Mm-hmm.
And I get shit for it.
Right.
And this is a little town where I've seen a guy with on more than one occasion at the little grocery store that isn't here anymore. Seen a guy who walks in to buy a loaf of bread and peanut butter and jelly, but he can't do it without having a .44 Magnum strapped to his hip, and he's not a cop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm a creature, and I admit it. I'm a creature of habit. Most of us are. We don't tend to modify our behaviors. We do the same thing the same way every day. In the little minutia of life. Mm-hmm. You know, I wash dishes from left to right, and the drainer's on the far right, you know, that kind of thing. I went out one day, and most of the Horn family knows the story already, but some don't, so it may be worth telling again. I went out one day to get in the car and go down to the Rippy Mart. And just about, and I'm a smoker. Yes, bad Bob. Very bad Bob smoker, bad. And what I typically do is when I walk out, I'll have one lit, and yes, I'll throw it on the ground. It's my yard. I pick it up later. I didn't that day. And I got in my vehicle, and I went to start it, and it wouldn't start. And I thought, oh great, here comes another $500 freaking repair bill that I can't afford. And then I started nosing around, and damned if I didn't smell gasoline. And I looked right there, long about where I throw my cigarette down every day when I'm getting in the car. It was a puddle of gasoline. And it turned out the entire contents of my gas tank were on the ground there, Rochelle, because the gas tank had been drilled out. Now, it wasn't siphoned. It wasn't somebody just, you know, it wasn't some ne'er-do-well, you know, shithead just out there stealing gasoline. It was a drill. I still have the photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Just a nice little hole where it would all drain out in a specific location. And it was, you know, if on the one hand I'd gotten blown to kingdom come, somebody would have been very happy.
Mm-hmm.
Or some group of people would have been very happy. But if nothing else, it served as a gentle reminder. I use the word facetiously. That they know where we are, and they will not hesitate to harm not just me, but my wife, my daughters, and my son. If you go, Rochelle, to, and I'll try to find the link and maybe shoot it to you on Twitter or something, but if you go to joebagent.com, Joe's gone now, but my God, he was from Winchester.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also raised in West Virginia. He and I became friends, and he once published an essay of mine a few years back about a confrontation with strip miners up on Golly Mountain when they were blowing Golly Mountain to perdition. You know, I guess I'm saying this because if you go and find it, you'll find that I have not always shied away and probably still won't from public expressions in West Virginia of my opposition to mountaintop removal. I mean, obviously, I'm broadcasting from West Virginia right now. My comments, my writings have appeared in the Gazette. I got run off of terrestrial radio in Beckley because I would not shut up about Massey. So I guess I offer all of this as a way of explaining that I have been down this road.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've not tree sat. And I've managed not to get arrested.
Mm.
Mainly because I can't afford the fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not willing to wait around till someone does. Because I feel like, you know, part of my mission is to make sure that these stories get out via this program.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I understand that folks are going to do what they deem necessary, and I don't criticize them for it.
Right.
But sweet Jesus, Rochelle, I fear for them.
Right.
And I don't fear for them esoterically or out of some academic fear. I fear for them because I know these people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've tried to run Bo Webb off the road and kill him.
Right.
They attacked, Judy Bonds, if she walked out in her yard, just about, was armed. Okay? Not because anybody wants to shoot anybody else, but because sometimes the caution that, hey, they got one too, is the only thing that slows them down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, consequently, they tend to operate from behind, the way they struck my lovely wife, such that, you know, later in the day I saw her urinate blood.
Oh wow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the most important thing coming out of this is that the duty that is owed to anyone who is going to put themselves in such a situation as that,
mm-hmm,
is that they be absolutely, fully, completely, utterly, totally informed of what all the potential consequences are. And it does go up to and include death. And I don't say that lightly. I don't think I've ever said that before.
I definitely agree. I mean, how could I not? And I hear you. I hear you, and you know, I think that as we go forward, I think that is absolutely probably the biggest lesson that we need to take with us in this. And you've definitely given me, another route to explore as a way to support this, you know, in ensuring that all of this, you know, all of this means something, all of this has a point ultimately. But, I hear you, and, I gotta say that I'm scared too. I'm scared for the people who live there and the people who go in there and the people who don't live there but show up there and do these things. And I don't think that anyone takes it lightly. And I don't think that you were indicating that anyone takes it lightly.
Right.
But
right.
I do agree with you that we absolutely need to remind ourselves of that again and again, probably every single second.
And yeah, you know, because the difference between like a Appalachia Rising in D.C. versus what happened last Saturday, even if the park police are kind of hardcore,
mm-hmm,
and asshole-ish, they're probably not going to take you and give you a thumping. But what we saw on Saturday was, it wasn't even a blurring of the lines, Rochelle.
Mm-hmm.
It was the state police going completely over to the side of the coal industry.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in a place where that happens, you're not in Kansas anymore. And it becomes twice as dangerous as a result.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just good luck. You know, I don't say that facetiously.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
All I can do is say, watch your back.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go anywhere in this state that you don't have somebody with you.
Right.
The buddy system applies to more than swimming.
Right, yeah.
And you know, I imagine most people already know that. But maybe one of the things that you and I have done this evening, far better than even maybe I did last night,
mm-hmm.
was to paint a portrait from with two entirely different perspectives of exactly what the nature of the conflict is here, how serious it is, how frightening it is, and how dangerous it is.
I hope so, because that's that as you've noted, I don't need to tell you that is not a story that gets told very often.
No, and frankly, that's part of the reason that I spend so ever-loving much time on the subject on this program, because it's not getting told.
Right.
You know, I don't have the listeners of you know, somebody in a major market or anything, but if some sort of tally is finally made, the one thing that they can say about me is that I gave more time to this issue broadcasting than any other broadcaster on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a whole archive there, you know, just keeping up with this story, this topic,
mm-hmm.
this struggle. And struggle it most surely is. You know, don't you find it interesting, Rochelle, before we ring off, don't you find it interesting that you and I and we describe this, and on my part I know it's deliberate, describe this as a struggle,
mm-hmm.
whereas the other side cannot resist the urge to engage eliminationist rhetoric and can't help but call it a war.
War, yeah.
They call it war. We call it struggle.
Yep.
Who is thereby more likely to be more willing to engage in violence?
Right. Well, before we do go...
Yes.
Speaking of struggles.
Yes.
Yes. The struggle for the Loudoun Museum.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you reminded me, because I want everybody, at least everybody who tweets and Twitters and so forth, folks may well remember the Friday night that I spent talking at length about the threat to the Loudoun County Museum and history generally.
Mm-hmm.
If that is the case, if folks do remember, there is an ongoing effort to save the Loudoun County Museum, to save that precious piece of history, and they need to follow Loudoun Museum on Twitter to keep up to date in that ongoing effort. And frankly, they probably need to follow you too, Rochelle.
They're welcome. They're welcome to do that. Loudoun Museum, just to make sure that everyone gets it right, because everybody makes this mistake initially. I did too. It's Loudoun. Museum, and I'm Birch Cello Wren, BirchCelloWren. As it happens, it's an anagram of my name.
I'm real slow. I didn't realize that. That's cool.
Most people don't. See, what it was is when I first signed on, I tried to just be myself, and they said, "We already have one. Do you want to be number two?" And I said, "Hell no."
Who wants to be number two?
I'm not going to be number two of anything.
Right.
I'm kind of a little way around this. So, no violence is expected there, although we do have a real asshole on the supervisory board who heads up a hate group, but that's a conversation for another time.
Yes, but everything you just said is true.
that's looking up. I will say that. I don't want to count the chickens and all that nonsense, but that's looking up, and I think after we do save the funding for that museum, I think I don't want to give any credit to those assholes on the board for anything more than I have to, but they have definitely invigorated us. And, you know, given this whole thing a new purpose and a new audience, to be quite frank.
Yes.
And that's marvelous. So.
And I still hope to find my way there, because I'm a museum nerd. I am.
Oh, and this is a great museum to nerd out in. It is.
I would. I mean, because, you know, the whole history of my family is the progress from the Atlantic seaboard over to the hills and hollers of West Virginia. My bunch just sort of stopped here, but geez, they went all the way to the Pacific Coast.
Right. Well, and actually that's one of the reasons why Loudoun County is so is such a popular destination for heritage tourism or whatever you want to call it, ancestral worship, what have you. Because it's just east of a pass.
Yes.
And people used to stop off there and provision on the way out west, and some of them left various records of themselves on the way through, and so, you know, get people from all over the country and beyond.
Yeah, and it goes so far back that it goes back to a time when out west was Ohio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So yeah, bless you for your support of this, because, you know, a lot of people are signing on because they love history, because they care about this, but for me it's deeply personal, and this is an institution that I love dearly, and have just been, it has warmed my heart like nothing else has in years, basically, to see the support that's come out for this. So
that's beautiful. I'm glad it has. Rochelle, this has been a magnificent conversation, and I thank you very kindly for it.
Yeah, thank you too, and you know, we'll keep in touch, and you get yourself up here, okay?
I will, and you've obviously figured out the secret Batcave phone number, so learn it, know it, use it.
Will do.
All right, take care, Rochelle.
All right, you too.
Bye now.
Bye now.
What you've just heard is probably one of the most profound conversations about how we accomplish the goal of achieving human rights and basic human dignity in Appalachia that has been had that I'm aware of. I'll be a long time thinking about all of this, and I welcome your thoughts on it as well. Of course, you know the email address, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid @gmail.com. And your calls, too, for that matter. And let's do keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Too bad, you?
Pretty good. I'm just kind of invigorated by that last conversation.
Yeah, I came into it kind of late, so I didn't hear all of it. I'll hear the rerun later tonight.
Okay.
But I called to give you a slight update about what actually happened in Burlington the other night.
Do please.
Well, actually what happened was there was peaceful protesters that were here blocking a governor's meeting on the pipeline. So it was a bunch of governors from out of state. And there's been some videos posted on YouTube. I've yet to see them, but I've seen a couple screenshots from them. And they were carrying, they claimed bats and milk, like I said, to protect themselves from pepper spray. Milk is the deactivant for pepper spray. It's well known. But the bats, I never heard anything about that other than the police saying that. And they weren't using pepper spray from a can. They were using pepper spray guns. They were firing.
I didn't even know there were such things.
Yeah, they're just like a paintball gun. You can use them from like 100 feet away and hit someone with 100 rounds in a few seconds.
Jesus criminy.
And there's screenshots. I'll try to find one and I'll send you a shot on your email account about it, but it shows one of the officers aiming a gun at someone. You see a blue streak, and if you look closely, you see the ball inside the streak.
Wow.
And all he was doing was holding a sign, and you can't see what was behind him or anything, but you just see him being shot from, like, maybe 10 yards away. Maybe.
Why was the meeting in Burlington? I know that may be going back a little too far, but I mean, I think about Vermont. I think about, well, I guess I've over-idealized it now, but police responses like that in Vermont just kind of blow my mind.
Yeah, I think it caught a lot of people off guard because it was kind of a blurb in our local news, and I heard something about there was going to be a protest on it, but I didn't realize the police were getting involved. And I mean, these police were armed in riot gear, so it wasn't even normal police, and it was like maybe for 20 protesters or something like that, I think.
And so once again, we had a police riot.
Once again, yes, we had the police in riot gear. They're overreacting the situation for normal people out there protesting using their amendment rights. But basically, here our police departments are coercing with the big government coal companies and whatever else and saying, oh, no, you can't do that. But you remember the right-wingers are the first ones to scream about their Second Amendment and their First Amendment rights as soon as you bring up something against them.
Absolutely. I mean, we can't, folks who aren't homophobes and aren't bigots can't even boycott Chick-fil-A, home of bigoted chicken, without a bunch of right-wingers the pissing and moaning about how their rights are being violated. Are they all Chick-fil-A shareholders? Are they all members of the Caffey family? I haven't sorted that out yet.
I don't know, but I had one come at me this morning over a posting I did on Facebook, and basically the same idea. They came out and said, you left-wingers are always so quick to jump on the Catholics and the Christians. But this isn't about the Christians. It's about the fact that Dan Caffey came out of nowhere and just made this statement about this. And then if you look into their company and what they do when they hire people, they make their employees sign a waiver not to talk to the media. I'm pretty sure that I heard, I think on Randy Rhodes the other night, she was reading a big article on them. I couldn't find it myself, but one that said that they take 65% of the profits from their people that own the businesses. They call the owners of the businesses operators because they don't own the business, the land, the equipment, or anything associated with it. They just run the business. Just a massive influx of things, and they ask you what your religion is before you sign up. They make you promise to spend time with your family, which isn't a bad idea in my mind. But they ask you what religion you are, demand that you take Sundays off and go to church with your family. It's a bunch of crazy stuff.
Well, you know, you say you don't see telling people to spend time with their family as a bad thing. No, but behind that, there is this presumption that for some reason or another, they need to be told by some corporation to do so. And I do, Jeremy, find that a little bit off-putting.
I do that, too, and I guess if I take a deeper look into it, I can see where you're coming from, because when they say spend time with your family, they mean with your straight partner family. That's what they mean.
Oh, darn straight.
And that's what they're trying to aim at. It isn't so much go spend time with your male partner, whatever, it's with your straight family. That's what they want. And I think that's the underlying meaning of everything they do, and that just it sickens me to no end.
As well it should. Because inherent in that is the idea that there are real families and families that don't matter quite so much.
Right. And then you have people who say that the mayor of that town, I forget where it is, can't boycott this company, can't say that they're not welcome in this town. The hell he can't. If the people stand up with him and a majority of the people want that to happen, it can go down that way. There's nothing wrong with it.
No.
In my mind, I'm all for places that boycott smoking. I'm not a smoker. I hate the smell of it. And I know that makes a lot of people mad. But 6 months ago, we were going to ban smoking on a public street here. People threw up a hissy fit saying you can't take that away. It's a right.
Well, that's frankly, that surprises me because that right is going away in a double quick hurry if it is a right in the first place. I'm not sure it is. I mean, I'm a nicotine junkie, and I'm not sure.
Right. Well, I mean, if you smoke, well, that's your thing. I shouldn't be subjected to it. I shouldn't be forced to stand next to a guy smoking a cigarette or something. I'm allergic to smoke. It makes me sick.
Oh, I know. My sister is too, and I take her. You know, I take that into account.
I mean, I don't blame people for what they do, but I don't think it should be forced on me in a public situation or to my kids or people's kids around them to inhale those chemicals and those fumes.
No. I mean, I was thinking back just the other day about, you know, just 30 years ago when, you know, department stores had ashtrays in them and not just at the front door. And frankly, if I were a merchant, I would like to maintain my store, you know, especially if I was selling clothing or something, without smoke smells in them. And I got no beef with that whatsoever. And
I was simply going to say that
it makes perfectly good sense. I mean, like I said, 30 years ago, you could be walking through, well, Walmart wasn't as big then, you could walk through, you know, a department store, or a, you know, a discount store or whatever, with a cigarette hanging off your lip. And if I saw that happening in the United States today, I'd be mind blown.
Yeah, I'll be 32 this year, and for the first 20 years of my life, anywhere you walk, it was a public situation. You could pretty much smoke it, including health department buildings, which is the ironic part of it all. That all changed here in Vermont probably within the last 10 years. First it started out public buildings, and then it even shifted to bars, which I think is a riot, but that's great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I look forward to those screenshots.
Yes, I'll definitely send you some.
It seems like the Vermont story and a couple of others, along with this West Virginia story, all begin to dovetail. Because what we're talking about, Jeremy, are overt manifestations of the transition of this country from something that wasn't necessarily a democracy, but also isn't full on fascism, to something that is full on fascism.
Right.
But of course, I guess, you know, the argument is that in West Virginia, it's, for as long as there's been a coal industry, it's largely been that way. Jeremy, have yourself a great weekend, my friend.
You too, thank you.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Yes, bye.
From Vermont, that was Jeremy. Lines open if you want to jump in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's happening, brother? I was thinking about you when I was telling Rochelle about Joe Bajent, because you're the one that introduced us.
Yes. I did something good.
You did something very good. My life was enriched immeasurably by knowing Joe and by reading what, and I, you know, periodically I still go to JoeBajent.com and just reread some of his stuff.
Mm-hmm. So do I. He was a very succinct writer, very interesting style. And he was a damn fine person as well.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, another guy that grew up in West Virginia who got gotten by brain cancer. And that's, and you know, that's what I was talking to Rochelle about. You know, it is dramatic when you see the cheap value that is put on human life here, and has been for 100 years. You know, there's something on the order of 100,000 graves in this state from people going down into the bowels of the earth. Even John L. Lewis, once upon a time, Cossack, said, "It is beneath the dignity of man to dig in the bowels of the earth." That was John L. Lewis of the UMWA. Can you imagine the current president of the UMWA saying something that profound?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
Unfortunately. But, yeah, I just wanted to tell Rochelle that back in my day, when we were contending with Nixon's Nazis, trust me, nobody cared when they got a hold of you. I mean, it was frightening. You know, what the police are capable of.
Right.
Yeah. I've seen people beaten so badly, their mama wouldn't recognize them.
Yeah. Or anybody who lived through the civil rights struggle anywhere in the South, or for that matter in other parts of the country that didn't get as much notice.
Well, Boston for one.
Denver. Sure.
Yeah. And another thing, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I was one of the founding fathers of DC Normal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking for a long time, and I did not know that, Cossack.
Yeah. I do claim paternity.
No testing required.
And, nope. And the reason I brought that up is we found it monumentally difficult for established organizations to recognize that we were fighting the same struggle. And I was telling them, hemp is a good plant. Hemp gives you wonderful things, which we...
Fibers and oils and nutrients and yeah.
Yeah, things that we don't need to use petrochemicals on if we use hemp. And trying to interest the establishment... the establishment environmental movement that, you know, this is a good thing to get behind, if for no other reason the ones are just giving you. it was impossible to get them interested. I kind of sense that's the same problem you're having.
Well, we're getting plenty of interest. It's uphill though because we're dealing with a house that's run by John Boehner. There's interest, and there's as far as the media though are concerned, unless it advances the for-profit media's pre-written scripts.
Mm.
Yeah, they're not going to be. I mean, look, CNN covered mountaintop removal. I think you even saw it. We may have talked about it last year. CNN covered mountaintop removal, and it turned into a Solenoid O'Brien puff piece about the poor, pitiful, put upon strip miners.
Correct.
And there was, of course, the nauseating footage of the strip miners' wives. How are we going to feed our family? And I'm going to say something asshole-ish right now, Cossack, and I mean not to you. It is contrary to my nature. But why is it that people who simply want their newborns to be able to breathe air in some sort of unimpeded fashion? Why is it that they are demanded, that it is demanded of them that they provide the solutions for somebody who quit school at 16 to go and run a D9 cat because he could get $45,000 a year doing it without any, and not need any education? Why is that, Cossack? You got an answer, brother?
No, sir. I do not.
I mean, if you watch that video that we posted at the headonradionetwork.com site, you know, you'll see him screaming on the side of the road, and you'll see maybe a daughter or whatever leaning out the window to scream obscenities. And you know what? It would be easy to say, well, you know, that's not representative of southern West Virginia. That's not representative of Appalachia. In that coal culture, Cossack, it damn sure is.
Yeah. And, I don't know, Bob, I'm totally flummoxed by the way that miners aren't paying attention to their own best interests. And their best interest is to get out of the hole.
Yeah. But what, if you if you don't have any kind, and I don't mean to sound like an elitist, that is not my purpose. I hope I don't. But if you disavailed yourself of any hope of an education, at some point, does some personal responsibility not have to attach? I mean, and again, understand that the educational system of which so many disavailed themselves was designed for them to do that. Oh, son, you don't need no more education. Coal company's hiring. Well, you reckon that coal company wants a guy with a bachelor's degree down in the hole?
No, it doesn't. For a variety of reasons.
And I have known, and my dad told me about, folks who mined coal who had brilliant minds, who if they had been given, if they had had a half a chance at an education, might have reshaped this nation. But instead, they were sent down into a hole to breathe coal dust and die young. You know, nothing is accidental in Central Appalachia. Everything that is happening here is by design, Cossack. By design.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's the whole point. I don't understand how miners don't understand that.
Well, but it's easier than you think. When your paycheck depends on you not understanding something, it is awfully damn difficult for you to understand it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. That, you know, they should pay attention. There are such things as renewable resources that could employ them.
Well, look here. You know, I was talking, I guess it was last night when I was talking with Brother Albert about the Governor Branstad out in Iowa, the Republican governor schooling Willard Romney about wind energy and the wind energy tax credit. There are more people in the state of Iowa with jobs in the wind industry than there are in Appalachia with jobs in the mountaintop removal industry. And our wind at the top of these peaks is arguably damned well better than Iowa's down on the ground. You follow?
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's not like that can't happen pretty damn quick. I mean, this country has sprouted wind farms from Indiana to Iowa to Texas to North Dakota in less than a decade. And there are people making good livings every bit as good as that mountaintop remover. But this is a disastrous, catastrophic economy by design. And that is why they don't want no wind farm down in Raleigh County.
No, but that's,
and they've got the mountaintop removal strip miners convinced that the wind power is communism. I swear to God, if Barack Obama himself came down here and declared that there would be a job in the wind energy sector for every last person working in coal in this state, they would scream, hell no, we want black lung. And that's just the cultural reality here. And if I come off sounding mean, I'm sorry. All I can do is talk, is express what I understand to be the facts.
No, I fully understand this.
Why can't that 4-year-old in that video that Mama's talking about, why can't he grow up and be a wind turbine technician?
Exactly.
Why can't he grow up and be a solar panel plant foreman? The only reason he can't Cossack, is because this government and its owner, the coal industry, will not permit it. And we need to understand some really essential things like that. So, you know, just saying.
So, I mean, you know, that's the whole problem behind extractive industries. Once they've extracted whatever it is they came for, they leave the mess behind and leave.
Right, and you and we get to figure out everything to the best of our ability on our own.
Yeah.
I mean, once the coal's gone, what are these bought and paid for politicians going to do? Beg the coal companies to stay and pretend there's more coal?
God only knows.
Yeah. Well, Cossack, it's good to hear from you, my brother. Have yourself a wonderful weekend.
You, Bob, and say hi to everybody for me.
I sure will.
If you would.
Yeah, hey to the chat room.
Will do.
All right. You take care, my friend.
All right, sir.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I didn't necessarily mean for Friday on the Front Porch to turn into another Cola Bobster. But I guess it did. But again, I don't feel real bad about it simply because who else is doing it? I know Malloy mentioned it last night, and I'm incredibly grateful that he did. We do have one decent chance to end this, and that's the AIC Act. Because sooner or later there has to be legislation, and at least the legislation exists, and it will take an effort that requires a little bit of persistence. Let's keep rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir.
How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good, I guess.
Well, yeah, sometimes guessing's as best as we can do.
You're right there. That's for certain. You know, pursuant to your conversation about the wind and solar, as opposed to the people who operate these machines that go under the ground.
Or over the top of it.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we're talking down the level of education, Bob. We're talking down the level of technical expertise. And it takes a great deal more technical expertise and education and understanding of what you're doing for wind and solar than it does for the people who barely get to the 10th grade, who go underground or who go above ground with a blasting facility. And in this state, look at the level of education and look at the attitudes of the people who live here.
And I think you have referenced in the past that you yourself, sir, have been a teacher, correct?
Oh, yeah. Certainly have. You know, that's right. And, you know, whereas a doctor can bury his mistakes, a teacher's live forever. And the quality of education, the quality of professional people that I have encountered, I mean, you've got, for example, people in the medical profession who cannot even conjugate a verb.
Well,
and who get you use I seen, and you know, or when was you there?
Don't forget my favorite verb form, tooken.
Yes, well,
I tooken her to the store earlier.
And this is nothing of which to be proud. This is nothing that goes back to the linguistic characteristics of the settlers who lived here. What it is a monument of ignorance. And people laugh at these people. And I hate to tell you this, and I'm not trying to be offensive, but I really don't think that many people in the rest of this country give a tinker's damn about what happens in Appalachia.
You're not, Jim. You're not being offensive.
I really don't think they do.
If America started giving a damn about Appalachia tomorrow, it would probably be more of a damn than has been given about Appalachia in the last 230 years of our nation's history.
Exactly, because this has become a non-area of the country. And this has become an area, with the exception of the Greenbrier and the resort therein, in which the golf tournaments are played, and which, you know, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor used to go when they went on holiday, or when Congress wants to come over to have a breather, or the Greek island thing in which Congress had before it was exposed in the early 1990s. This is a non-essential part of the country to the rest of the people in the nation, with the exception of a few environmentalists and people who, like yourself, care and understand the impact of what's going on. I mean, people have become so isolated and so self-driven and so inured.
Oh, look, Jim, I mean, I would not disagree with you for a farm on this topic. I mean, I have people from outside Appalachia. If I tell them I'm from West Virginia, they ask me if I know Jesco White.
Bob, who the hell is that?
Oh, dear God.
No.
If you are ignorant of the personage of Jesco White, go light a candle when you say your prayers tonight and pray that you never find out.
Okay. I'll accept your word on that. Because, see, I'm not a West Virginian.
No, you're a transplant.
A transplant just by virtue of the fact that I wanted to live in a place that had four seasons and not have a sweltering summer, as in South Carolina, or a caricature of winter. And basically, initially, it was attractive in that respect. The people were warm, friendly, kind. But over the past, say, 16 years, a lot of that has really changed. I mean, people have become so mean-spirited, polarized.
Where did it come from, Jim?
Oh, it came from, number one, the basic source of economic of subsistence. Because of this coal thing, you've got this state just... And it didn't take a whole lot to do it because people's literacy level is so low and their level of, of attention to the real world has become that, you know, they believe that coal is their only savior and that anybody who is against coal is a communist, is a, someone who is trying to take bread out of their mouth. And, you know, when you look at the state, to tell you the truth, Bob, what is the main industry in West Virginia?
It's not coal.
What is it?
It's Walmart.
Well, who feeds Walmart?
I may not be following. You're going to have to help.
Who provides the customers at Walmart?
Well, I mean, as I've pointed out before, there are more teachers in West Virginia than there are coal workers.
More teachers?
Yep. More florists than there are mountaintop removal workers. More nurses.
Oh, my God, for what?
The gross state product of West Virginia is coal is 7% of it. The single largest employer in West Virginia is Walmart.
Well, that doesn't say a whole very lot, does it?
No, it doesn't. I understand. If I had next to no education whatsoever and was making $70,000 with it, I'd get a little bent too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But there is also a point at which the externalization of that $70,000 a year salary onto the backs of 3,975 innocent dead West Virginians per year has to take a back seat to the dead folks. Right? I mean, Doesn't conscience and morality and ethics suggest that?
Effectively, but not realistically.
And not realistically, Jim, simply because we don't have all those 3,975 people together to die all at once. If that happened, there is an odd chance that something might change. But even that is only a chance, Jim, because in 1972, the Buffalo Creek, the sludge dam above Buffalo Creek in Logan County burst. And that was only a few, maybe a couple of hundred million gallons of toxic coal waste. And it sent a wall of toxic waste running down the Buffalo Creek holler. It killed 125 people, and it dispossessed thousands.
But how many people really knew about it?
Oh, it was national news.
And how, well, how they knew about it. But people are so quickly able to forget. Just for example, this business in Aurora, Colorado. It's gone. Nobody
cares. Yeah, you know, I was reminded of that today. I'm glad you brought it up, Jim.
Nobody cares about that today. I mean, it's yesterday's news, and, you know, it's, I'm sorry it happened, and yada, 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 and...
Well, yesterday in Tennessee, they had their primary, okay?
Okay.
And this is a picture of both the nerve and the gall of the National Rifle Association, and what you just described, the passage of a horrifying story from the news cycle. The National Rifle Association spent $200,000 trying to defeat, and I don't know what the outcome of the election was, a pro-gun Republican candidate for no other reason than the fact that she was not in support of a bill that would make it illegal for a business owner to ban people from coming into her business bearing a gun.
Well, Bob, it's more than just sidearms and stuff like that. We're talking about assault weapons and things of that nature. And
yeah, but they went after one of their own over it. I mean, the reason I brought it up is it's very like coal. It is an orthodoxy, no element of which may be challenged.
I'm afraid you're right.
You know, in the first video that came out of the protest on Saturday, there was footage of a man saying, "If you can answer my question, I'll go away." You want to end coal in West Virginia? Well, what then? Well, that's, you know, that was pure and unmitigated bullshit, Jim, because the people I know are trying to end mountaintop removal. We don't have a damn thing to say about underground coal mining. And we make that clear, abundantly clear. But you know what? The people who want to believe what they want to believe can't hear that because they are being told this filthy lie from the coal industry that there's an Obama war on coal.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that from the office of the local representative there, that Obama has declared war on the coal industry.
And here is a man who made a point of coming down to Beckley, West Virginia, for the memorial service for the 29 men who were incinerated in Massey's Upper Big Branch mine, and not only praised them, and not only glorified them.
Lionized
them, absolutely, but then went on to repeat the West Virginia Coal Association's own advertising slogan for them. Barack Obama stood in that armory, and you know where I'm talking about, the Civic Center, whatever.
Right.
And he said, "We must all remember that coal keeps the lights on."
Well, Bob,
and the next day, the National Mining Association had a press release out saying Barack Obama has parked his tanks on the mining industry's lawn.
Parked his tanks on the lawn? I don't understand that.
Oh, because they can't resist the eliminationist warfare imagery.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll have to descend to the next rung on the ladder. There is so many people in this state just resent the fact that there's a black man in the White House. And that's basically it.
Oh, that's the absolute truth.
And that's the absolute truth. And, you know, as long as people are so stupidly wooden and woodenly stupid to believe in that type of prejudice and hate a man because of the color of his skin and because of his origins and because of whatever reasons they can conjure up, and that's basically what it is, it's just conjuring.
Yeah, and, you know, I just got an email in here I think you're going to like. I think you'll appreciate Irish Day just sent one. It said, Steve Biko once said, the most powerful weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And how very true that is.
Oh, yeah. And it's filled with prejudice, and it's filled with all types of preconceived notions about humans and individuals and how people in many parts of the country who simply don't like individuals whose skin color is not like their own.
Amen. Amen. Jim, have yourself a good weekend, my friend.
All right. Good night.
Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Jim, he too lives here. He knows of which he speaks. Hey, welcome to the program. One, two, three.
Bob?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, we talked just now about Walmart and who's the biggest employer in West Virginia. Well,
yeah. Quick, who've I got?
Thomas.
Oh, hey, Thomas. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but as far as Walmart, we're the biggest employer because we pay for all the darn things that Walmart doesn't pick up. You know, they get the welfare rolls, they get the food stamps and everything else. We're paying for it. We give them tax subsidies, everything.
You're absolutely right, so, Thomas.
And so we subsidize Walmart. So. That's the, you know, it's like when I hear Walmart, no, we are.
Yeah.
It's all on us.
Right. And by the same token, Thomas, the coal industry doesn't pay nearly as much to the mountaintop removal workers as a baby in the womb does.
Well, they're stretching industries to take everything out of your wallet.
Yeah. And they also extract along the way, human dignity, human rights, any sense of justice, the entirety of any desire for a functioning political system. Absolutely. That's the coal industry.
And just one final thought. On Sam Cedar yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Final tweet of the day. You.
Wow.
Yeah,
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that pop up on my Twitter feed, and there was no way to get to it or anything. That was nice.
Yeah, need Bob and Cade there, Sam. You got to talk to him about the 8-pack. So
that's beautiful.
That's all I got to say.
And you know what? Well, I'm glad you reminded me though, Thomas, because there we will be talking about the 8-pack as well tomorrow evening. I'm going to join Mike Fader on his program on Sirius. About 7 o'clock
F-E-D-E-R.
Tomorrow evening. F-E-D-E-R.
Right.
About 7 o'clock Eastern Time.
Well, good luck for that. I hope you get response.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Thomas. Have a good weekend, my friend.
You too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
A good buddy Thomas calling from Ohio. I don't know if we're having phone problems or what, but having a hard time keeping phones on hold here. Apparently, I'm being told in the chat room that our buddy Onward to Dystopia was dialing in. Okay, all right, Onward to Dystopia. We'll try again. I'm guessing the next flashing light will be you. Because it's, well, it's, you know, I got to tell you, I got a little spoiled last week. Agnes was fielding calls, and I was actually able to know who was on the line from one call to the next, and that's kind of nice, because you don't feel, I don't know, you get some sense of continuity, perhaps. Okay. All right. Is this you, Onward? All right. Don't go away. All right. I'm bringing you on the air. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
All right.
From South Florida.
Yeah, Florida. Yeah. Okay, so I got you this time.
Yes. Well, it's my first time on any radio show. So.
Really? Ever? Anywhere?
Yep.
I am honored.
Oh no, I'm honored. Yeah. Well, just like I don't know where to begin, but just like what you and Cossack were talking about earlier about the about the people running D9 caterpillars or whatever, getting that education. It's a lot to do with just being greedy, just being damn lazy, you know?
I hate to go there, but yeah, there's an element of that.
Maybe
to be a little bit more charitable, simply a long-standing willingness to take the path of least resistance. I mean, look. I mean, this is reality. I'm sitting here with a college degree, and I don't make a tenth. Hell, I don't make a 20th of what a guy who dropped out of high school and runs a D9 cat on a mountaintop removal job does. I mean, that's the truth.
Well,
so, I guess you can't blame them for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's having a, I guess you found that higher calling, you know? That's what it's about.
Well, or maybe just an unwillingness. An unwillingness to demand that some portion of 3,975 West Virginians a year die so I can have $60,000 a year myself.
Yeah, well, they don't care.
Right, because A, it isn't real to them. B,
that's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's just some more of that egghead science. That's just them liberal tree huggers telling lies about our honorable patriotic jobs.
Yep.
It's a tough pill to swallow. But you're doing fine. Like I've said before, we've never lost a caller and never had to call 911 for anybody, so yeah. You won't be near as nervous the next time, and you don't sound nervous now, so don't feel that, no. And I wish there were ready and soluble answers. Is soluble even the right word? I wish there were ready answers to these things, but like I told Cossack, this is by design. And it is made, it is made difficult to break by design.
Well, that's why we need people out there, fighting a good fight. Like, for example, you know, that show, whale wars, you know, you have people going out there, you know, and involving themselves in direct action. That's what needs to be done, you know?
And it takes tremendous courage to engage, the power structure, from a position of powerlessness.
It's going to take direct action from the outside of the establishment. It's also going to take people to take direction within the establishment. Even, you know, like I've been saying, you know, we need more good liberals or progressives or whatever to even, you know, up in the ranks of the military, for example. Because, let's say, hypothetically speaking, when the barricades go up, who do you want in the Army when they declare martial law? Do you want the sick neo-Nazi fascist freak to be calling the shots, or you want some, good liberals that will take the side of people?
Yeah, it would have been nice if there had been one member of the West Virginia State Police with a damn grain of common humanity about him last Saturday. Maybe there were a couple. I don't know. I wasn't there. But it sure isn't the picture you get from watching the video.
Well, they're cops, you know, pigs. They're dogs, you know.
Well, and they really did come from. They really did come from from the mind guard thugs of days gone by. That is their origin.
Hmm. As far as the history of Appalachia, I'm not really knowledgeable to the extent, of course, that you are. But you know, like recently, I was watching a documentary on free speech about what you were just talking about earlier, the Buffalo Creek disaster or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot there that I didn't know.
Right.
You know, you're doing a great job. You know, educating a lot of us that don't live in a lot of those parts, you know, and as far as what's going on and, you know, the struggles and everything you guys have been going through, you know, it's terrible.
Yeah. Well, thank you very kindly. I appreciate you letting the horn be, your first call to a radio show. I really do.
Yeah. Well, I'll call again.
That'll be fine. You take care and have a good weekend.
All right, Bob. Thank you. All right.
Bye now. And so we find ourselves at the end of this show and at the end of this week. Remember, on Monday begins the PRISM West Virginia American History Seminar, Summer Academy. All day long. Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Monday. And we'll try to have regular shows on definitely Wednesday and hopefully Tuesday. This in from Andy before we go. Not only has Mr. Obama repeated the coal keeps the lights on slogan, but also he keeps imprinting on the minds of America the clean coal slogan, yet the coal industry honchos will excoriate his rear end at every media event they run for fun and profit at the expense of the hillbillies of Appalachia. It's an amazing societal phenomenon. Obama is waging a war on coal, they say. Oh, please, says Andy. He doesn't have the guts to wage war on coal or its financiers on Wall Street. We could only hope he would. And that, of course, is the absolute truth. Absolute truth. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for your kind contributions to keeping all of this on the air. And thanks for your contributions of time and energy, ideas, thoughts. It is all a very humbling experience on this end. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox for all he does to keep the website and all the audio tech behaving itself. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Nothing happens here that doesn't go through the 10-year effort of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org. Go to ACACT.org and learn what you can there and do what you can, having learned, to help end Appalachia's agony. Please. There's also a PayPal button at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. They can always use the help. Order a t-shirt. It's the coolest t-shirt in America. Save the endangered hillbilly. Stop mountaintop removal. It will be a conversation starter. I guarantee it. It's right there at crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.